All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we have a guest speaker, Nick Charlebois from Microsoft, who's going to talk to us about Microsoft 365 DSC. So welcome, Nick. You know, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight on this episode. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what your role is at Microsoft?
Sure. First off, you can see that I'm wearing same jerseys. Canadian MVP jersey. Mine was number 14. It got retired in 2016 when I joined the company. Nick Charlebois. Used to be called PFE. So I don't know if you folks are aware of it or not, but we just went through a major reorg inside of Microsoft Services. So my role now is customer engineer, which is what PFE used to be. But I moved to a different team, which is the global technical team. So it's a worldwide team where we go and focus on specific projects inside of the company. So Microsoft 365 DSC is my project internally. And I'm based out of Gatineau, Quebec, which is right across the river from where Habib and Curtis are in Ottawa. And yeah, that's about it in a nutshell.
That's great, Nick. So tell us a little bit more about 365 DSC and how it became open source.
Yeah, well, so I've always been a big fan of putting everything I work on GitHub, right? To be honest, I never consider myself to be the smartest guy in the room. So everything I do, I just want to put it out there so that smarter people can actually join in and contribute to the project. So this is how it all started. Before I joined the company, I was responsible for a tool called Reverse DSC. So you folks might have heard of it. Reverse DSC is a generic PowerShell module that you can point against any environment, and it will extract PowerShell desired state configuration file. Well, it will extract the file and all the configuration data from it, and will allow you to take that file and replicate your environment somewhere else. So we do have one for SharePoint on-premises, for SQL Server on-premises, IIS, Active Directory. So I've always been using GitHub as an open source platform to publish my code, right? So the idea was that we would do something similar for Microsoft 365 and publish everything we've been working on the GitHub gallery so that the community can come back and contribute any code that they've written themselves, or be able to report, provide feedback directly, and just be transparent, right? As a matter of fact, when we launched a project back in 2019, we had somebody from the United States approach us saying, look, I'm working for a nonprofit organization. We've written a bunch of Exchange Online modules and would be interested in converting those to DSC resources and contributing to the project. And still to this day, about 20% of the Exchange Online modules that we have been contributed by the community, by this nonprofit organization, which I think is huge, right? So again, being transparent and just being able to get more smarter people to contribute back to the project, I guess is the main driver behind putting it, making it open source.
That's really cool. So in terms of like next steps or the vision of DSC, maybe talk about, you know, where you see it going. And second part to that would be, what are some of the challenges that you've come about as a result of creating DSC and executing on this vision?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer will pretty much answer both questions at once. So the vision is that we want to make this module as easy as possible for people to consume. So the vision would be that the tool, right now the tool requires you to run on PowerShell 4 or 5.1, right? So you need like the full-fledged version of PowerShell. And the vision's always been to allow people to run it on PowerShell Core. The challenge we have now is that the module relies on so many dependencies that it would also require every dependency to be compliant with PowerShell Core. So for example, the tool right now lets you deal with Azure AD. So you can configure Azure AD, you can configure Exchange Online, you can configure some of the admin stuff in the O365, OneDrive for Business, Power Platform, Planner, Security and Compliance, SharePoint Online, OneDrive, and Teams. And we are working on the Intune module as well. Every workload I just named uses a different PowerShell module under the cover to be able to authenticate back to Microsoft 365 and to execute some command lets under the cover. The challenge we have right now, for example, the SharePoint Online workload is using PNP. right? So we completely dropped support from the SharePoint Online Management shell. We're only using PNP now, but PNP doesn't support PowerShell Core yet, right? It's coming. Support is not there. Same thing goes for the Teams. Teams is actually a different beast because Team is using two modules. You have the Microsoft Teams module that lets you interact with Teams channels and users. And then you have the Skype for Business Online module that lets you deal with everything that has to do with voice or collaboration. That module doesn't support PowerShell Core. It actually doesn't even support certificate-based authentication right now, which is a different topic that we might want to cover later on, which is the authentication issues we have. So until all those modules start supporting PowerShell Core, our vision, I mean, we're not there yet, right? So one thing we know for sure is that the vision at one point is that we will stop using all those sub dependencies and we will only be calling the Graph API, right? But again, we're not there yet. We are leveraging the PowerShell Graph API SDK, which is the new tool that Daryl Miller is leading from our end, right? But the thing is, we're still missing some APIs on the Skype for Business front, for example. So we can't convert the entire thing. So that's one issue. The other issue is the fact that we're dealing with so many dependencies and they all have their own specification. So again, for example, Exchange Online and Security and Compliance, we're using the new Exchange Online Management Shell module for both of them. Everything that has to do with Exchange Online, we can connect to using certificate-based authentication, right? So we can actually use an Azure AD application and authenticate to it. Everything that's Security and Compliance, you need to continue using basic Okta credentials. So that is another challenge that we're facing. So we are in touch with the various PGs trying to align our solution to match what they're coming up with, right? So we know they're going to be updating their solution soon to support certificate-based authentication, which is going to allow us to update our solution. But it's, again, it's there's so many different pieces to the equation that it's hard for us to be able to come up with something that is consistent across the board. It's coming because everything's moving to the graph, but in the meantime, we're in that hybrid state. So that's really the big challenge that we're facing.
Right. Thank you.
That definitely sounds like an interesting dilemma. So it kind of leading into my questions around the complexity of these, dealing with these PowerShell modules. I'm wondering if the vision of DSC getting to that point where you can run on .NET Core or PowerShell.core, are you pulling these other product groups to see that vision? And are they kind of moving along that way and you're kind of pulling them faster than maybe they would have before? Or are you kind of just working with them as that stopgap until Graph can do everything you need and then you're going to kind of just cut that out?
I mean, the vision is clear, right? For everyone is that we're going to start leveraging the Graph API. So everybody right now has an initiative to move there. So we're not really putting any stress on them because the stress is coming from somewhere else, right? Where they're being asked to move to the Graph. So in that sense, we're not the one really driving the agenda, right? We're just going along. We are involved with all the PGs, right? So for example, I don't know, a few folks have followed the news recently, but it seems like we're releasing a new Teams feature every week, right? So try to keep up with that. Well, I mean, we have a pretty good contact with the Teams PG, so we're being made aware when a feature is going to be released, when the different common lets that are being used to manage those features are going to be updated. So we have access to some preview stuff so that when they actually release it to the general public, we can go and release an updated version of Microsoft 365 DSC that supports those new features.
How do you balance the PowerShell module versioning as well as should we use the preview version like Azure AD where you can only set some things there versus the GA or the public version? How do you kind of balance that? And are you pushing some of the preview features into the GA quicker for that? I know dealing with even just the Graph PowerShell modules, the versioning is quite a nightmare from an end user perspective, trying to update them. And then there's, you know, dependencies and references, and you end up having to just like uninstall them all and then try again.
Yeah. So to answer your question, we're trying to stay away from preview module as much as possible. The only exception right now is the Azure AD preview, right? Because everything that has to do with groups naming policies, that has to do with group expiration, that's only available in the Azure AD preview. And that was, we were trying to make the Teams workload as complete as possible for the back to school season. Right?
Yeah.
So now that, I mean, and one thing that was crucial to the back to school season was this ability for the school boards to block words for students not to use when they're creating new groups. And trust me, I've seen a couple of templates that came up with school boards, and I've learned a lot of new words. But that was really crucial to what we're trying to do. So we made the conscious decision to go and use the Azure AD Preview, which is using the Graph API under the cover, but that's the only one right now, right? So even for the PowerShell Graph SDK, we are waiting for version 1 to come out before we actually release some new modules. We have one for conditional access that's ready. It's all written. We're just waiting for the GA version of that Graph API SDK for PowerShell to be released so that we can go and release the Azure AD conditional access resource. Because right now version 0.9.1, I believe, is the latest version they have available. We want to make sure that version 1 gets released, which is the official GA version, before we move on, right? So we're trying to, as much as possible, with the official release version, Azure AD Preview being the only one exception that we have.
I won't open the rabbit hole on the authentication side. I hear that. Pain, especially with, you know, like Skype for Business PowerShell module. But maybe kind of going into how you're aligning all the different open source initiatives, like there's the Azure AD DSC, there's the, you know, the MS Cloud Login Assistant, there's DSC Parser, there's a reverse DSC. So there's quite a few components that are kind of all around this space. How are you kind of aligning them?
Yeah, that again, great question, right? The just one thing is the Azure AD DSC stuff. That was a project we originally decided to start. And when we were looking at it, we realized, you know what, it's going to be even harder for us to split it down, because the idea originally was to split the Microsoft 365 DSC tool into different DSC modules. And we just said, you know what, I mean, it makes sense when you're dealing with, let's say, Teams deployment, you're going to need some of those Azure AD components. And Azure AD, to be honest, is kind of the foundation for many other workloads. So we said, you know what, it's going to be included. So we did a rebranding about 4 months ago. I think it was somewhere in April, where the tool used to be called Office 365 DSC. And when we brought in the Azure AD module in it, we said, look, we're going to rebrand to Microsoft 365 DSC because it makes sense. And we're going to start including everything that's related to productivity inside of the Microsoft 365 cloud, right? Including Intune, which is the next release that we're going to have. Now, going back to your question around various other open source projects, the beauty about the PowerShell Gallery and the way you're actually deploying your modules is that you have versioning in it, right? So the MS Cloud Login Assistant, for example, is not only used by Microsoft 365 DSC. It's being used by many other solutions that we have internally. And we made some changes to the solution that are specific to Microsoft 365 DSC and which don't really fit the other projects that are using it. But the thing is, we have that version in the gallery, I think it was version 1.0.12, that some other solutions we have internally are using. It's still referencing that version of the module. We can go ahead and release version 1.0.24. It doesn't matter, because when you actually define your solution, you're specifying a specific version. It's the same thing as NuGet package, right? So you're using dependencies and versioning. So that's really important for us to be able to, when we have dependencies, you can go and specify a specific version there. Now we, again, those modules that you just named, right? Those three modules, MS Cloud Login Assistant, the DSC parser, and the reverse DSC one, those are being used by, I want to say, about 100 different other solutions inside of the company, right? So it's really important for us to be able to, whenever we make a change, we need to do some regression testing. And before we just go crazy and update the dependency version of all those other tools that are using it, we need to go and do some proper testing. But yes, it is challenging.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, swinging more to now on the end user perspective, you know, over the last year and a half, right, because I think it's, you know, been out since I think last February, I think when you first published your first video in your YouTube series. Maybe you can talk about your experience over the last year and a half about, you know, how have you seen the organizations have been using it? And then is it strictly more of an ad hoc or utilizing the installed agent? And or is there any automation being done through it?
It really depends, right? I mean, right now, and we have telemetry, right, to be able to tell how the tool is being used. And the tool is being mostly used for exports, right? So people that are going in and trying to export the configuration of their tenant. That's really the first step that most people do. They install the tool and it's super easy. You provide your credentials and you just get the configuration out of it. And I think once people start realizing the potential of that file, right, that they have, which represents their full fidelity configuration, they can take that, they can run an assessment against their tenant in a month from now, right, to see what changed. They can deploy it or clone their tenant, all their tenant's configuration over another one. I think the light bulb starts going off, right? And what we've seen, I mean, the last stage of maturity is when you're starting to integrate that with your continuous integration and continuous deployment processes. Right, we have some customers of ours that took it to the next level, where basically what they have is they have a dev environment that where they let their dev do changes directly in the interface as much as they want, right? Because somehow, I don't know, they don't want to let the dev access PowerShell or something. So the dev go in, they modify settings, they create new SharePoint Online search results source, for example, they change the sharing settings. And then whenever they're good and they want to push that to QA, what they do is they open a pull request in GitHub. So they just open a blank pull request with a description of what they want to do. That pull request automatically does an export of their configuration from their dev tenant. It goes and it sends a review request to the admin that will go and review what the configuration looks like. If they approve it, it's automatically being pushed to the QA environment. The QA team gets an email saying, please review the configuration. They go in, they review everything, they approve it, and it gets pushed to production, right? So they're starting from an environment where they're not even using configuration as code, which to begin with is kind of funny when you hear about it, but it starts making sense when you realize that the developers really don't play with PowerShell that much, right? They're really just there to flip some switches in the interface and they want to push it all the way up. So it's everything is automated from ground up after that point, right? Or we have other organizations that just decided to bite the bullet and they're saying from now on, any configuration modification that we do has to be done in code to Azure DevOps, right? So every time you need a change in the past, the admin would go either in the web portal and make the changes there, or they would search the web, find what the command let is for a certain operation and run it. Now all they do is they open Visual Studio Code, they have their source of truth, which is their main configuration. They make the change there, save it, push it back to Azure DevOps, hopefully open a pull request so that people can review it. And once it's approved, that configuration automatically gets pushed to the dev environment, then the QA, and to production, right? So very powerful. So we're seeing different stage of maturity. Just like any other tools, right? When we build something, you build it for a specific scenario, and then you start seeing people use it for a thousand different other ways, right? For example, and I know you folks are familiar with this, but the tool is currently being used for geolocation migration, which is not something we anticipated in the beginning, right? So it's when clients are trying to change region, where let's say their Teams instance was deployed in a US data center and they want to bring it back to Canada, right? Which is a common scenario that we're facing nowadays. So what the tool lets you do is go and extract the configuration from your Teams environment. So extract it from the US based instance. The product group, you actually need to open a support case with the product group. They'll go, they'll delete that US instance, create a brand new one in a different data center that will be plain vanilla without any Teams configuration. And then you take that export and you just replicate it there. So you're essentially extracting from your tenant, something changes in your tenant in the backend, and you're pushing it back to the same tenant. But in the back end, it's a different data center, right? This is definitely not something we anticipated when we built the tool, but it makes sense. It's a supported scenario that we have now, and we actually have different versions of the tool to support that geolocation migration scenario, which is huge, right? So again, different ways of using the tool, but most clients starts with the export feature.
No, that's great. I mean, I'm very familiar with that last scenario that you mentioned.
I've gone through it a couple of times, and so I'm living and breathing that. Definitely a challenge, but definitely great to be able to have the tool to be able to get all that information. And so from what we were talking about before, like, you know, the different process of automation, we are going to be publishing a blog post on Microsoft DSC on how to integrate that with an Azure Automation Runbook. So look for that in a future blog post on our site. So Curtis.
Yeah, Nick, I was wondering, what's really cool about Microsoft 365 DSC is just all the different workloads you support, which you went through them. What specific workloads do you find organizations are using the most for Microsoft 365 DSC? And I'm guessing it's Teams, but I would like to hear what you're
56%. Yeah. So 56% of the current active usage is Teams. And then Exchange Online follows second with about 23%, and Security and Compliance third and equal with SharePoint, right? So which is about 6%. But again, there's been such a big push for Teams because of the COVID-19 crisis that it just makes sense. But to be honest, the focus has been on Teams lately, and even inside the team, just because of the frequency of new features that are being introduced, right? We need to go back and update the resources, so we don't have as much time as we would like to go and give love to the other workloads, right? So Teams is definitely the main focus right now. Intune is another big one that we want to release. Hopefully, we don't have an ETA right now, but it's coming in the fall, that's for sure. And again, trying to help schools and healthcare providers do their work remotely as much as possible, right? With bring your own device and being able to set policies on those. I think this is really, really important. So it's, yeah, but as far as the current versions of the tool, Teams is definitely the one that's being the most used.
I was a little surprised that Azure AD isn't in the top three. Does that surprise you a bit?
It does, but if you take a look at it, we don't have that many resources in Azure AD, unfortunately, right? Because right now we have group settings, we have groups naming policies, and group expiration or lifecycle, right? I think there's only four, or maybe there's a fifth one that I can't remember, but there's not a lot of it yet because we are waiting, as I mentioned previously, on that GA release of the PowerShell Graph SDK. And Teams has, I think on top of my head, something like 18 different resources, right? So telemetry, I mean, you can make the numbers talk if you want. If you have 18 resources compared to four, of course, there's a chance that one of those 18s are going to be used more often than the four others, right? So, yeah, but again, in the normal world, Azure AD would be up there because it is the foundation for all the other workloads, right?
Yeah, okay. It's interesting to hear you talk about, you know, Teams because of the back to school and the education vertical and the healthcare vertical. And as you alluded to, I mean, once you do that initial export, you got that granular definition of what your environment looks like. It's pretty powerful to sort of apply a template of a known good state configuration or of a template for a specific vertical. Are you finding that Microsoft 365 DSC is being used more, there's more interest now for organizations to do that for a specific vertical or even best practices from a security perspective?
Yeah, and we're still in talks trying to figure out what's the best way of coming up with what you're describing is what we refer to as blueprints, right? So it's, think of it as an approved configuration, right, that has been approved by your organization or by somebody else, right? Because the thing is, we got to be very careful if we put something out there and say, this is the approved configuration by Microsoft for the education industry, right? I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that, but I think what we could do is, here's what we recommend, right? Put it on GitHub, right? Because it's nothing but a configuration, and then let people from the industry provide feedback, provide our suggest modification, right? So that would be it. So what we're looking at right now is coming up with industry-specific configuration. But then when you start talking to people, like we have in the United States, there's what they call K-12 schools, which is essentially schools for kids between 5 and 16. And then after that, you get into higher ed. Well, in Quebec, where I'm from, it's called primary school, which is from 5 to 12. And then you have from 13 to like 16. So depending on the country, you also have different settings. And then you always have settings that are specific to the organization itself that will be different between two school boards in the same region. The beauty about DSC is you can do something we call partial DSC, which is just essentially a shopping cart. That's the way I describe it, right? So you go in and you go, all right, so I want to build that environment. I'm going to go and, oh, I'm going to shop, I'm going to buy, or sorry, I shouldn't use buy because we're going to put it open source, trust me. But the idea is, all right, I want to get this this education layer, and I'm in, let's say, Germany, so I need the ISO whatever security and compliance layer, so I'll put it there. And then I'm part of company ABC, so I know I have this other layer that's specific to my organization. So I basically put those three layers in my shopping cart, and then DSC will automatically package those in a resulting configuration. So I think this is where we're heading right now, having something that's industry specific, that's legal and jurisdiction specific, and then you have that other flavor that's really specific to your organization. This is where we're seeing the blueprint initiative going, really.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And just quickly on that, is our blueprints on the Microsoft 365 website? You have a tab for it. There's a couple of them, but can you just talk really high level, really quick about what the vision is for that? And I guess maybe it's just what you described, but is the shopping cart going to be on the Microsoft 365 GitHub repo?
So again, right, there's been a bit of back and forth on this one. And that's just the nature of things, right? The idea originally was for us to publish blueprints on our website. And then we realized, you know what, I am far from being an education specialist. So who am I to come up and publish an education blueprint, right? What I want to do is put something out there, right? Talk to some customers that are willing to help out, come up with that baseline educational blueprint, put it out there on GitHub, and let the industry experts make changes or submit improvements to it, right? So the idea would be to host it wherever we want, ideally GitHub, right? So, and this is actually bringing me to another topic, which is the new Assert M365 blueprint commandlet we released. In the past, we had something called Assert M365 template, which was essentially connecting to the Microsoft 365 DSC website. And it was using, what it was doing, it was downloading the template, it was compiling it, and it was doing a test DSC configuration command under the cover with that template you just downloaded. That didn't work if you had MFA-enabled credentials. That's just the nature of how the engine works. So we changed that completely. What we're doing now is you take a blueprint. It can be hosted anywhere, right? So if you decide to host a blueprint on your own website, doesn't matter. Just put a link in there. So the Assert M365 blueprint commandlet has a parameter called blueprint URL. It could be local. It could be under like your CDSC whatever file, or it could be on the web. You pass it that. And automatically when you run that, it's going to prompt for your credentials. It's going to analyze the blueprint. Let's say the blueprint defines only Teams calling policies and Teams meeting policies. That's all you have in your blueprint. So it's going to go and only extract those two resources from your tenant. So you have a local file now, and it will do the assessment there. Right. So we've moved from this idea where we were going to use Microsoft 365 DSC as the main repo for all blueprint to, you know what, put them wherever you want. Right. As long as you make them available in a place that people can collaborate on, ideally GitHub, right? And we let you point to wherever you want. So I'm not saying that blueprint section is going to disappear from the website, but we might actually link it to a GitHub repo where we're going to have community contribute on various industry-specific blueprints at one point. I think that's really the vision, and I'm being totally transparent. I think this is what would make sense, more than us hosting them on the website.
Yeah, okay. No, that makes tons of sense, and that sounds great. Thanks, Nick.
Hey, always a pleasure.
Yeah, so I mean, again, thanks, Nick, for coming on. I mean, I think it really goes to show all the hard work that you and the team has put in to, provide this tool to be able to have organizations manage, you know, sort of their infrastructure a lot easier, whether doing it manually or automated and stuff like that. And the power of all the
you know, the DSE that or what DSE can do. So, I mean, I think that's really great. And definitely I learned a lot out of this session as well, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, your vision has been really great, at least, you know, from a transparency perspective, to let us know where you guys are hopefully headed from a future perspective. And yeah, thanks for coming on. And, you know, we'll look out, I guess, our listeners for that blog post on the Azure Automation Runbook integration. And hopefully we'll catch you on our next episode. So thanks again, Nick.
Thanks, folks.
Thanks, guys.